think it's something that's really underrated in film. I don't know. I can't speak to other professions, but that people are nice. You know, when you're on a film set, you're out there 12 hours a day. We were in 115 degree heat. You know, people can fall apart pretty quickly. And you want to be surrounded by a group of people, including your cast, who are good people that you want to work with.
Welcome to Bitch Talk. I'm your host, Erin, here with my co-host, Ange, aka Captain Party. And over the last 10 years, we've been elevating marginalized voices through interviews and events.
Sometimes over a glass of whiskey. If you're thirsty for more bitches, head over to bitchtalkpodcast.com and follow us on Instagram.
A big thank you to 48 Hills and our listeners for voting us Best of the Bay Best Podcast in 2022 and 2023.
And now, on with the show.
Welcome to our South by Southwest 2024 Film Festival coverage. Today we're covering narrative films about being lost and or searching for something. We're All Gonna Die and Desert Road. For one of these interviews, we'll be joined by our part-time festival bitch, John Wildman. Enjoy.
We are on Bitch Talk here at South by Southwest. My name is John Wildman. I'm the editor-in-chief of filmsgonewild.com. With me is Bitch Talk head topper, Angela Tabora.
Sometimes bottomer. I'm a giver and a taker, John.
And on this one, we're going to talk about the feature We're All Gonna Die. I'm going to have our co-directors introduce themselves so you will recognize their voices. So,
yeah, hi, hello. My name is Freddie Wong. I co-direct and co-wrote We're All Gonna Die.
Hi, I'm Matthew Arnold. I also co-directed and co-wrote We're All Gonna Die.
It's such a coincidence that we're here together.
It's pretty crazy.
First time
movie
we've ever met.
You just met in the hall.
Yeah, you guys just got here together, too. All right, we start this off by having our filmmakers introduce the audience to the film. They haven't seen it as yet. Okay. So one of you tell us about We're All Gonna Die.
Okay. I'm doing the sound effects. You can do the
You get the easy part. We're All Gonna Die is a rom-com road trip set in a post-apocalyptic world where a giant alien tentacle thingy landed on Earth, and we try to kill it. We try to do everything we could to it.
It set the world into total turmoil. It jumps around, and the movie takes place
10 years later.
Like a decade later. It's still there.
It's just there.
We just deal with it now.
Just kind of living
we
it.
We didn't solve the problem. We threw a missile at it, didn't blow it up. So like, I guess we just have to live with it now.
But then it ends up being about a kind of a struggling beekeeper and a depressed EMT who are both dealing with grief. And they go on a weird road trip to retrieve their stuff that the alien tentacle transported across the United States of America.
It's a very inconvenient sort of thing that's happened to both of them. But it's a road trip comedy rom-com, which is what people don't expect when they see both the title and the materials and the giant imposing alien spike in the trailer.
It's funny you say that because I think we're all going to die every day. So yeah. It's actually quite fitting.
You know, can I say it's so funny because that phrase, you know, we came up with that obviously and we're just messing around in the pandemic. Right? Oh, that's what we try to come up with titles. And then the time since, there's been so much. It's just showed that phrase shows up. It's in like music. It's in like the Jay Baruchel did a movie about it. People are like, is that the movie? There's like, no, there's another one. It seems to be on everyone's mind, the zeitgeist. I wonder why.
Well, I feel like the main, not to already get so heady, but like so much of the movie was just us like just thinking about that phrase and how you can just say it in different ways. It's like in the beginning of the movie, it's like a big like horror title slam, like we're all going to die. But you can also just say it as kind of like a accepting kind, like it's just a thing, like we're all gonna die, like it's what it is. Like it doesn't have to be a sad thing, like it's just a fact.
Yeah, it's funny that you bring that up because I did want to talk about that. So in the beginning of the film, it's hitting you fast, all these news, these headlines, everybody's in chaos. But then when you get to the story, it's just like our regular lives. But that's kind of what we're living every day, right? Yeah, like 100%. While we're sitting here laughing about, you know, dumbass jokes, serious shit's happening all around us. So can you talk about placing this post-apocalyptic world in the world we live in right now?
This came from a number of observations that we had about apocalyptic movies, which is there's kind of two flavors of apocalyptic movies. It's either the world is ended and we are scavenging the wastes and we gotta, you know, there's like a carcass that you gotta chop up and you gotta use a tin can to heat it up and eat it, you know. Or,
which we always found was a little bit like apocalypse porn. It's a little bit like...
They love that. Everyone watches it.
Wouldn't it be awful if we didn't have any jobs anymore and all we had to do was have cool guns and fight bad guys? It's kind of like an oddly freeing... I think there's a reason why a lot of American cinema got to that apocalyptic like badassery and stuff. Or it's the heroic, the asteroid's going to come and we're going to destroy it.
We're going to send up these miners and they're going to blow it up, you know, with a nuke.
We're nerds and we're also history nerds, and it just feels like in general, like, that's not how apocalypses happen. Like, apocalypses aren't endings, they just are new, they're just a new status quos. Like, history has had so many situations where countries have gone to war, and finally, I think it's like America, we're not used to that, but it's like generally people just go about their lives. And I think the pandemic was the first time maybe like America saw that, where it's like the world doesn't end, you don't fight an asteroid, it's just like shit gets real, and then you still have to pay your bills and deal with your family and just live your life. Like, people adapt. So we kind of wanted to approach it that way.
And, you know, we wanted to make this sort of apocalyptic movie where it's like, but like realistically, though, life goes on. You know, I was even reminded, I remember, you know, I can't even remember the conflict, but I remember seeing footage of like, you know, war footage, and but it was taken from like a roof and it's happening across the city. But, you know, over here, that's not happening. So it's like, yeah, we're having tea, you know. So it's like, it's this sort of like this space. We always sort of like compress things where it's like, it's all, you know, always like this and it's always awful. And it's like, no, it's like, it's varied. It's variegated across space and time. And, you know, I think it's a thing where I think people can get really down on themselves sometimes when it's like, when you have that sort of doom and gloom. But I think it's important to sometimes remind yourself that it's like, no, it's like life figures out a way to kind of continue on. And it doesn't, maybe not look the same as it did.
And the Black Plague killed like half of Europe and they still like had parties.
Yeah.
They still hung out. They still had a farm. And that was worse than anything we've had. So, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't a straight line to being like, well, load up the muskets because it's time. It's zombie time apocalypse time. Time to eat people. Yeah.
Okay. Here's one of the things I just love about the movie. It's almost every single character is a lying liar who lies on their throne of lies, right? Yeah. And which is great because you go, well, in an apocalyptic scenario, we are, you know, I mean, people often do lie anyway. And in that kind of case, you go, I can see where people just don't, they've just given up. They've just said, you know something, I'm just going to do whatever I can to get the shit that I need or want. But what I want to ask you both, you know, as you know, writers, directors is... You know, and this may even happen in the editing process, let alone shooting it, is when you go, have you done one too many lies? I mean, should we pull back a little bit? Is this a moment where we finally get, you know, they can finally be honest with each other? Talk about that process.
Well, I think honesty is at the core of everything that that any worthwhile art is, right? Like, I don't think that the expression of a character lying comes from some deeper emotional truth that they're trying to express or trying to get across. So for me, I don't ever see the way that we interact with at some level there's a truthfulness to it, and I think that capturing that is important in the filmmaking process. You know, I think that whether it's coming from the veracity from an actor performance, you can't build it off of artifice. Your foundation still has to come from emotional truths. And that's, I think, for us, one of the things that, you know, our work has spanned a very strange and varied gamut, right? Everything from, you know, we did a web series called Video Game High School, and on the surface of it, everyone was kind of, we were joking around because it was like, yeah, it's a future where everyone's high schools are training the future pro gamers, and pro gaming is going to be, video games is going to be the most, you know, largest sport in the world. But at the end of the day, that story is a high school coming of age story, and it drew from our own high school coming of age sort of experiences. And I think that a lot of times, even in that case, you know, people were like, oh, this must be a fun, jokey, you know, sort of web series. Like, no, we were trying to cut at a lot of our truthful sort of experiences that we went through, and to express it in a way that had a degree of universality to it. And I don't think you can do that if you're building your narratives off of artifice.
I think lying is always fascinating. We were talking, I have a 5-year-old, and we were talking about like an interesting developmental phase for kids is when they first learn to lie. Because it's a moment where they realize like, oh, like what's happening in my brain is different than what's happening in the outside world. And like, I have control over it. And I feel like whether it's talking to yourself or lying, there's a sense of like bringing in something in. And I think for somebody like Talia, who's going through grief, like she's using it to like, she doesn't want to talk about things because she is, that's the little bit of control she has over something that she has no control over, which she already lost her family. So it's like, if she doesn't have to bring that up, if she can avoid it, if she doesn't have to talk about it, if she can lie to herself about it, that's, you know, that's a way to kind of bring control into something like that. And then we always said the other character Kai, like if Talia is like a scar, that wound, that, you know, it's a wound that healed poorly, Kai, who his friend just committed suicide, is like an open wound. He's just all over the place. He's still bleeding. He's just blubbering. He's like crying and happy and whatnot. And when he's lying, he's just like, he's just trying to figure it out. So like, you know, he's like this girl, he wants to go on a date. He doesn't have any money. He's going to lie about it. But then he like, he feels bad about it instantly. So then like, he's like, oh, I don't have any money actually. So I think it's just, an interesting part of kind of human nature and kind of exploring how people can, you know, lie to themselves and to other people.
And also we're all going to die. So who gives a fuck?
Yeah, who gives a fuck?
Anyways, exactly. I did want to dive into another part of the story. So Talia has an interesting fetish for calves. And I'm going to have to tell you, I do too. I like a man with some nice calves. Go. I do, but it's not really something I talk about. So I'm like, are you both oddly proud of your calves? And you're like, oh, let's bring back the calf fetish.
Look.
Because I was into it.
For those who don't see it, like I'm a rather big man. I'm proud of my eyes, but I think I have pretty good calves. You know, it's got to carry a lot of weight, so I got some pretty good calves. I got my wife shapely, does like my shapely legs. And I always find like those little idiosyncrasies of characters being like where it's most honest and where it's most fun. And you know, it's anytime you're, I guess as a writer, whenever we're doing a scene that feels kind of tropey or classic, the meet cute, it's like, just how do you get it to feel a little bit real?
Where's the spice?
And then we were, and sometimes we act out scenes when we're like writing to be like, because we're also directing, so we're always thinking of camera angles right away. So I think we were literally like, Freddie was like literally kneeling down, and I was like, oh, Talia could be sitting on the, but anyways, I saw Freddie's calves, and I was like, oh, like she should just be really into calves. And I'll say that the response we got is like every, like without a doubt, every single woman we gave the script to was like, whatever happens, keep the calves moment.
I love it. So Ashley Burns,
she was... And here's the best part. Every guy we showed the script, like, a little bit weird. I don't get this weird calf.
Yes.
And I'm like, you're wrong.
That's so...
You're wrong, guys.
I've never talked about it with friends, but it's something I always notice. Like, oh, nice leg. Yes.
Yeah.
So we just thought it was really funny, so we kept it in.
I love that the men don't get it. That's
they don't. They didn't. Universally, they didn't. And I was like, what do you mean?
You're going,
like,
to blow people's minds. Yeah.
I do have to admit that I've added that to my routine.
That was an important aspect of the audition process, right? Because we were like, listen, this is like a front and center thing. Can you, it's strange, but can you do some toe, like lifts? How is your legs? Like, you know, it's just going to be a close up, and we'd rather, you know, and we're low budget, you know, we self finance this thing. It's like, we're not getting a calf double.
You can't CG calves.
You know, like this isn't, it's not in the budget, but if you got good calves already, then that's definitely a plus. Jordan, our lead, Jordan Rodriguez, fantastic calves. And he was like, you know, he's like, oh, yeah, I got working out.
He could get something off the top shelf for me.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, we're going to end it on that because where can we go? Jesus. Again, the film is We're All Gonna Die, screening at South by Southwest. We've been talking to co-directors, co-writers Matthew Arnold and Freddie Wong. Guys, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
What up, Bitch Talkers? We're here at South by Southwest 2024. We're talking about the film Desert Road. And what we're going to do is have our writer-director introduce themselves and what the film is about.
Hello. My name is Shannon Triplett. I'm the writer-director of Desert Road. It's a movie about a girl who drives down the road. She stops, gets gas, and then she crashes her car in the desert. And from there, all hell breaks loose. It's kind of the movie just takes on a life of its own from there.
Yeah, watching this film, I grew up in Southern California, and we would drive to Vegas every year. It was our annual family trip, and I've done, you know, spent the night camping at Death Valley. So this film brought back a lot of memories of sort of the beauty of the desert, but also how it could turn scary real quick.
That's a great way to put it.
And as I was reading your director's statement, I read that this was based on a personal story. So can you elaborate for the audience?
Yeah.
And this is also your directorial debut. So
it is.
Why you chose this story?
Great questions. I think as a writer, like, you're inspired from lots of different life experiences. I've always been somebody who's been inspired by locations, road trips, huge fan. And like you said, Southern California, the deserts here are amazing. Mm-hmm. I go out to the desert all the time. One trip out there, my boyfriend went on an 18-mile run, which, to be clear, this was not me on an 18-mile run. This was him. And he crashed, and he kind of needed me to, or he burnt out and needed me to go pick him up. And it was, night was falling, and I couldn't find him. There's no street signs out there. And I was just driving up and down these roads on the outskirts of Joshua Tree, trying to find him. And, the desert definitely turns on you very fast. And it's just one of the good examples and bad examples maybe is better, of just kind of life experiences of this is not a movie about my boyfriend or a runner, but it's a movie about somebody who's, isolated in the desert. And what do you do when you're alone? So many great genre films that I love, but it's a group of people, and this, it's just her.
Yeah, this is a thriller, but it's also talking about a lot of serious topics, I think, because I thought about mental health, there's violence, trust, and then there's math. Thanks a lot.
I was with her when she was watching, and she's like, now math? Yeah. And I was like, okay.
Like, oh. But it's a lot to manage in a script and to direct, so can you talk about that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think this is a movie, this gal, she wanted to be a photographer, and we start with her at a point in the film where she's given up on that dream. And I think it's such a great question that I think a lot of us can relate to. You know, when you're five, you want to be an astronaut and the president of the United States. and at some point, you kind of have to go, is my dream realistic? You know, can I achieve this, or is it a pipe dream? And that's whether you're in the creative fields or anywhere in your life, that's a fork in the road we all have with making decisions. And it's such an interesting story, and it's nice to mix genre with some themes in there.
And it is all connected, honestly, right? All these different parts of your life.
Yeah, it is. And it's hard to look at one element in isolation. But yeah, you've just listed so many great, great themes and things, trust and I don't know.
And also how to navigate the role as a woman.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. There used to be so many films where the woman was, maybe a damsel in distress. And we've gone 180 where there's so many great female roles, but it's maybe one note of just strong, strong, strong. And I can't speak for everybody, but like, I'm a little bit complicated. I can be very strong, but I also can cry and be sad, and I can be smart, but I also can do dumb things. You know, you can be everything. And I think Christine, our actress, is amazing. She did such a great job of doing this character justice, of making her seem very real. And as you watch it, I love the movies where you go, what would I do? What would I do if I was that character? How would I get out of that? And Christine's amazing and takes us on this great journey.
I don't think I would have been as productive as her.
Yeah.
I'd be like, give me your biggest bottle of whiskey. This is where I die. Yeah. Like, I'm going out numb. Anyways, I'm glad you brought up Christine, because she carries the weight of the world in this film. And I'm wondering how long it took you to cast her, and what sort of qualities did you think this character needed? Because it's very different from any other lead role, because she's literally everything.
Yeah, she really is. I think one of my early notes to our producer was like, this movie is the woman. She's in every scene. She carries it, like you said. I had seen some of Christine's work. What I was looking for was somebody who had range, and what I loved was that I saw a different character in different movies, and so that was like a really good indication that she had range. I also believed her. I don't know how other directors pick actors, but I just watch things and I go, I believe that. That felt real to me. There was some authenticity in there. And then I got to chat with her, and she's so smart. She would reference these books and all of these things, and she just had such an intellectual, thoughtful approach to things, which I loved, as the script really needed somebody who was smart to pull this off. And she was so sweet as well. I think it's something that's really underrated in film. I don't know. I can't speak to other professions, but that people are nice. You know, when you're on a film set, you're out there 12 hours a day. We were in 115 degree heat. You know, people can fall apart pretty quickly, and you want to be surrounded by a group of people, including your cast, who are good people that you want to work with. And on top of that, I think you just have to go with your gut. Like, there's just something special about Christine. And I can't wait for more people to see the film, because the first scene that we shot with her was just her sat in a car. It was, you know, when you see the schedule and you go, oh my God, who wrote this scene? It's just her in a car. And it was the first scene that we shot of her, and she was just mesmerizing. Like, the combination of her with our cinematographer Nico was just, oh man, you get goosebumps when you sometimes just get so lucky. So Christine, man, she's just incredible.
Well, we have to talk about the rest of the cast and people that show up, like,
yes,
if it's okay, no spoilers, but spoilers, Beau, yeah, Bridges and Frances Fisher, what?
Incredible. Incredible. Like, this is my directorial debut. You, right, don't get Beau Bridges and Frances Fisher to come hang out with you in the middle of the nowhere in the desert. So it was incredible. Frances, I really wanted her for this. And
for that specific role?
Yes, for that specific role. I think there's just something, again, just so real. Sort of a theme of this is, as I wanted it to feel real. I didn't want it to feel like a movie, not a documentary, but just this kind of realness. And Frances, again, just watching her performances, she's just incredible. And she told me that she had told her team no horror. So maybe that, like, I felt like we were trying to get her the script. Would she read it? And when we finally got her the script, she's so nice and just very giving and kind. And we had a Zoom, and she was just like, I couldn't put the script down. And when you're a writer, like, that's what, you know, that's a dream.
You
to
dream
hear.
For that, yeah, someone to say that to
that's
you.
That's so rare. I mean, even me as a writer, you know, to read something when one sitting is, so that was, and she was amazing. She was just, I don't even have her energy at my age. Like, she's just so full of life. And, you know, you kind of talk about that X factor in movie stars, and she has it. She's just, you know, walks onto set and everybody's eyes goes towards her, and just up for trying anything. She was totally unfazed. And, you know, we didn't have hair and makeup on set. I just had a backpack with, you know, a bunch of dirt, and she would just dive in and be this person in the desert. And Beau Bridges, I really have to kind of give a hand to CAA. Beau is at CAA, and CAA has been very kind to this project, which, you know, these big agencies are their own mammoth. They make these big studio movies, and they were just so kind to us and suggested Beau Bridges. And would he want to do this movie? He read it and again just responded to it. And I think there's just something universal in that fork in the road of trying to make decisions, and that we all kind of respond to. And he's amazing. He drove out to the desert. He got lost on his way out, and he was like, it's very fitting. Get lost in the desert. So, and you just don't know what to expect. Like, I had a Zoom with him, and I was so nervous ahead of time because it's Beau Bridges. Mm-hmm. And he was just, it's impossible to be nervous when you're chatting with him. He's just like, hello. And just, so kind, not what you would expect of, you know, both for Frances and Beau, people of, with their extensive resumes, to be so grounded. And I think it's what makes them such great actors. They're still sort of vulnerable and just, yeah, incredible. What a gift. I still just can't believe they did this film with us. But man, they elevate it. The cast is so important to this movie. It's my first conversation with Suzanne Scheel, our casting director. I think I started off the meeting with, if we could win one award, I want us to win Best Ensemble. And she's like this New Yorker and was like, okay. And I was like, all right, we'll move on now. But I just really wanted her to know the cast is this movie. Let's find great actors. And man, Suzanne Scheel's amazing at her job. Because look at this cast. It's insane. So
it is insane. I'm glad you keep bringing up how kindness is really important. And yeah. That's a common theme. We had an interview earlier today.
Oh, great.
And these two women were saying, like, it's just you have to work with people that you enjoy spending time with.
Yeah.
Especially in a creative position like this where mm-hmm. it's an independent film. You're not making, you know, yet, you know, a billion dollars on this. So you may as well be having fun while you're working. You
yeah.
know? So I like how that's a common theme that you keep saying.
It's so important. And it's, I don't have this big, like, alpha personality, you know? So if somebody comes in and they're a yeller, they're going to, I'm going to disappear, you know? And also if people are angry or hostile, it's how do I focus on creative endeavors? How do I give the actors what they need and our cinematographer when I'm stressed out? Maybe it's my inner, I'm a middle child. So, you know, you just always are trying to keep the peace. Yeah. So, and it was the desert, you know, it's 115 degrees. Like people lose their cool, but you can forgive that for all of us when the majority, it's there's this kindness and yeah, so.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the desert because I was going to ask where you shot this, what time of year, and I can't believe it took me this long to say how beautiful this film is. Oh. It's so beautifully shot. So if you can talk about the location and the cinematography, just like the real simplicity of the lighting, and but it's still stunning.
Yeah, the location we shot about an hour and a half north of Joshua Tree, which if you're trying to picture
Return
a map,
to the scene of the crime,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. If you're trying to picture a map in your mind, there's nothing there. I think Route 66 goes through it and nothing is there. I didn't even, you drive on a road north of Joshua Tree and it's just majestic. And it's like, I go out to the desert all the time. I had no idea this was out there. And it's just, the desert is a character in this movie. It really is. The landscape, it's incredible. And that simplicity that you mentioned was something I think was, I don't know, it's just sort of important to me that it was about the characters. And as an indie, you know, you don't have a lot of money to build crazy big sets or whatever. And the desert is just this majestic landscape that you typically can't get these kind of amazing backgrounds on an indie. And what an incredible gift to for making a small film. Nico Navia was our cinematographer and was amazing. Our first meeting was 3 hours, and I if he survived that meeting, which was just me like grilling him with question after question after question, one of the first questions he asked me was, how are you going to do these night scenes? Because typically on these big films, they'll have 70 massive lights and a massive crew to set everything up, and that's how you do night shoots. Our lighting department was 2 people. So I told him the moonlight. I had done some full moon tests, and there was a camera that came out that shot with crazy high ISO. So it was possible. If you had a full moon, you could do it. And after a couple of tests, it was like, okay. And I think to a cinematographer, to Nico, maybe they think it's crazy, or they're like, let's do it. And thankfully I found somebody who was as crazy as I was and was like, let's go shoot in the desert and in the dark. We're very lucky that it turned out. We had a tech scout during a full moon, and it was cloudy. And that was our last go out to the desert. And Nico and I knew what we were doing was ambitious. And other people on this film knew that because we had scheduled our whole film around the full moon, the first week and the last week, so we would have 2 chances. But during that tech scout, I think it was the first time the producers were sort of like, what's the backup plan? Because we can't afford those 70 lights. And we had 2 weekends, so we had 2 chances at the full moon. But thankfully Mother Nature was kind to us for the full moon, and we got it, and it was beautiful. And Nico, I really wanted, my background is I typically work on some of these bigger films, not as a director, but on set. And what I've seen is they set up all of these lights. The actor has like a tiny little spot that they can move their head just a little bit, but if they move too much, the lighting is bad. And I told Nico, our whole thing is we give our actors freedom. I want any lights that you want. I want them to be practical lights. So you're not moving them between shots, between takes, you're not making adjustments, and our actor has the freedom. And then we put the camera basically on Nico's shoulders, which was, we talk about everybody else's kindness. It was very mean of me. The camera was 50 pounds. So Nico all day, every day was carrying this camera. But it also gave him total freedom. So if the actor did something incredible, Nico could move side to side to adjust, to get a better composition. And I hope we got something special by giving both our actors and our cinematography that creative freedom, and not kind of restraining what their options were. We started talking about landscape. I ended with actors again. Sorry.
Totally fine. Yeah. Well, the film is Desert Road. Thanks so much for being on the show, Shannon. We really appreciate your time and this conversation.
Thank you so much. You guys have the best podcast name I've ever seen.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us on today's show. You can find more information about this episode in our show notes.
If you're missing us, you can visit us at bitchtalkpodcast.com to sign up for our newsletter and buy us a cup of coffee.
Did you know we're also on the radio? You can find us at bff.fm.
And lastly, rate and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. All the cool bitches are doing it.
This podcast is a proud member of the BFF.fm podcast network. Learn more at podcasts.bff.fm.
BFF.fm, best frequencies forever.